So for anybody kind enough to listen to us, we are representing the Most High Show tonight. And I've got right here a puppy named Cash Money. And he's our special guest. His co-host is Mr. G.
Hello, hello.
G Money. And we decided to come together today to talk about the sixth step of recovery, which is one of 12 steps that are used for recovery from substance abuse, addiction, and other afflictions. So people with eating disorders or gambling afflictions also sometimes work through these steps in an effort to grow spiritually. So the reason we were able to get Jared to join us today was based on our history, which Jared and I were roommates back in high school, and I got kicked out from my house because I wasn't cooperating with my father, who wanted me to follow some good orderly direction. And so I found myself living at Jared's house, and Jared's mother and Jared were kind enough to take me in, being a wild child. And I don't even remember how I met Jared. It was certainly through some
extracurricular activities,
drug network. And Jared and I seemed to click. So we both really enjoyed smoking weed and doing ecstasy. That was kind of our deal, at least from what I remember. And Jared and I found ourselves under investigation by the Roswell Police Department. Shout out to Roswell PD. Hope you guys are checking us out. And ended up in the back of a cop car after a pursuit. And we didn't realize that they were recording us in the back of the
car. You didn't realize it.
I didn't realize they were recording us in the back of the cop car. So I divulged information about the contents of the home that we were residing in. And they proceeded to try to get in and confiscate the materials necessary for black market drug dealing. And that's kind of how this all started. And I was inspired by Jared to also start my own company selling narcotics on the black market, which is quite lucrative. And so it was. So welcome, Jared. Thank you for being so kind to grace us with your presence today.
Oh, I appreciate it.
So we wanted to talk a little bit about the sixth step, which, if I remember correctly, is where we basically divulge on paper and to someone else what we believe our character defects are. So no, five is where you basically go over your fourth step with your sponsor. So the sixth step is actually where you put down on paper these defects of character, where you kind of own what it is that you do that's destructive and selfish and things like that. And before we get into that, I think it's important to kind of qualify ourselves. So the reason that I say that I ended up deciding to take this route of recovery was after a rough year where I ended up basically being extracted from my father's home by a SWAT team. And at that point, it was more or less clear to me that I had somehow gotten off track. I had never planned to be extracted from my father's house by a SWAT team in my underwear. And I remember a little bit about Jared's story, but the MARTA routine is something that sticks out about Jared to me, and maybe he'll be interested in divulging a little bit about what qualifies him for this program.
So you want to hear the MARTA story?
I love the MARTA story.
Let me preface the MARTA story with, when I first started smoking weed, I did not think it was going to end up where it ended up. And you know, there was quite a few years that were building up to the MARTA segment of my story, but it got to a point in my addiction where my body was revolting against me. And what that looked like for me was that I was getting sick to my stomach on a regular basis, especially in the mornings. However, in order for me to quote unquote function, I would have to consume certain chemicals every day prior to going into work. And I found that one too many times I was getting sick to my stomach after consuming these things, and I felt like I was wasting them. And so one day it appeared, or it happened upon me, that I thought it might be a good idea. I went back to science class and thought if I just carried a to-go cup with me, and, you know, if I had to get sick, I could throw up into this cup, and then logically, economically, whatever's in the cup, if it was in my stomach, including these chemicals that hadn't necessarily fully digested, if I consumed those chemicals by drinking them, then, you know, it made perfect sense at the time. So I remember the first time I drank my vomit. You don't forget that. It was actually a Tuesday morning, 7:30 on MARTA, and I had just eaten these pills, and you know, I got on MARTA dressed in a suit, and I felt that feeling in my stomach, like, this is gonna happen. And I remember sitting there, and I had to, you know, discreetly, because at 7:30 on a Tuesday morning, you're not alone on MARTA. So I had to discreetly throw up into this to-go cup.
Wait a second. So you were conserving. You were a conservationist.
I was an economist. You know,
you were a drug addict.
Through and through. So I discreetly threw up into this cup, and then I sat there and I gave myself a pep talk because drinking your throw up is disgusting. And so I gave myself a quick pep talk and went to it and down this throw up. And, you know, the first thought that would go through any normal person's mind would be, where has my life gotten to? Like, what did I just do?
And instead you thought?
I thought that wasn't that bad. Like, I worked it up so much, like we usually do, that, you know, I was pleasantly surprised that drinking your own throw up at 7:30 on MARTA wasn't that bad. Now, for anybody out there watching, I can save you the trouble, if you haven't already drank your throw up, and tell you what the worst part is, and that's that it is warm, since our bodies are 98 degrees. Well,
oh my God.
Well, there's a solution to any problem, and my solution to that problem...
Rehab?
Not yet.
Oh, okay.
We got a few more years. But my solution at the time to warm vomit was to, once again, just common sense, refrigerating it. Now, there's a problem to that, too, is that all the chunks float to the bottom, so you got to stir those up. Or you can do what I did and, you know, prepare the night before and just drink orange juice on a regular basis for dinner.
Oh, wow.
Because that tastes pretty similar going up and coming down.
You were prepared.
So, yeah, I don't know if that qualifies me.
So you took the cup of vomit to work with you, solo cup, I imagine, and then refrigerated it, and then drank your vomit and got high off of that.
Any lengths.
Wow. So that was your bottom, right?
Nope.
Oh.
Nope. Like I said, we had a few more years. You know, that's a disgusting part of my story. However, the inner turmoil that I experienced, and the heartache and the disappointment that I caused myself and those that I loved, that was ultimately the bottom. You know, sure, there were the DUIs, you know, one of which was, again, in the morning on my way to work. There were seizures involved from withdrawing from certain substances. There, like you had already mentioned, there had been cops in and out of the story. But ultimately, it was just that feeling of disgust of what I had become and where I thought I should be and where I actually was. And, you know, right around the time, this thing called Facebook was getting popular, which made it very easy to watch my other friends progress in life as I continued to digress. And all these things just added up, and I just felt empty inside. I had no passion for life anymore. I was really cynical, and, you know, something had to give. And that was the bottom.
So where to from here? And I'll speak for myself. When I realized that I was dying and I needed some help, I ended up in treatment and I was offered a solution. And at first I wasn't really that interested in it, but I started to see people like Jared and other people around me getting better, and they were as bad as me, if not worse. And so I started to think, well, maybe I can get better too. So I started doing what they did, and we went through what some of the steps were on previous podcasts, and we're at step 6 now, which is where we basically take an honest look at our character and figure out and put on paper and discuss with another human being the nature of our malady or what our real character defects are. And so for me, it was basically like, if you could Google character defects, everything that came up, I had that. That was my problem. Egotistical, prideful, selfish, narcissistic, but strangely combined with this destructive behavior where I had an inferiority complex. We're often described as addicts, as egomaniacs with inferiority complexes, which is a very weird place to be, because one day we're on cloud nine and the next day we feel like the scum of the earth, and back and forth we go, and we try to manage that with substances. And so when it was explained to me that I wasn't necessarily a bad person, but a sick person that needed treatment, I felt a little bit of relief in knowing that I wasn't doomed. And so when I wrote these things down and talked about them with someone who I confided in, who had much more sober time than me, they related to me that they too suffered from most of these things, and they no longer had to be owned by them. And they were described to me almost like fingernails, right? So we have fingernails for a reason, and we just want to make sure they stay manageable. So if your fingernails are too long, they're going to cause you trouble. And so we keep them trimmed down. And part of the step work process that we work on is keeping our character defects at a minimum. And it's kind of like whack-a-mole. So sometimes I might be a little too lazy, and so I'm not making enough money. Well, I balance that out with working, but of course I end up being a workaholic. And so periodically I have to try to work less, and I kind of gravitate that way. But nonetheless, I could easily decide to go into early retirement at 35, no problem. However, I've got bills to pay. So it's this back and forth dichotomy that I personally struggle with, and it's gotten a lot better. And so I've seen it get better for people around me. And what does that have to do with staying sober? That's the interesting thing. If I can live a life that I feel good about, I think about getting high much less. And that for me has been crucial. And so all of this work that we do, which is considered spiritual in nature, it really helps us live a life that we feel good about, and that we can sleep good at night knowing that we didn't hurt anybody that day. Or if we did, it gives us a routine to make things right and try again the next day. We don't have to self-destruct in the process. Has that been your experience?
Oh, definitely. But, you know, I don't know about you, but prior to getting sober, when I knew I had a problem and reached out for help, if you would have, I had no clue what the whole process was going to look like. Because if you would have asked me at that time what the issue was, I would have said drugs and alcohol. I didn't think anything else was wrong with me. I didn't think I had, you know, any character defect I had, I thought stemmed from those drugs and alcohol.
You should have called me. I could have told you what was wrong with you.
But, you know, it wasn't until getting into the step work that I started realizing that the drugs and alcohol were just a symptom of what was really wrong with me. And like you had already said, why the necessity to look at these character defects. And, you know, I like your analogy with the fingernails, and I just had to learn that if I was ever going to live a life free of substances, that I had to change the way I was living, you know. And I had quite a few character defects too.
So let me get this right. If you keep hurting people and hurting yourself and creating chaos and misery, mm-hmm. it's difficult to feel okay about that. And so you continue to...
It's a vicious cycle.
It's a vicious cycle where you continue to anesthetize yourself in an effort to deal with the pain and suffering that you are inevitably causing yourself and people around you.
Exactly.
But these steps have given people like us a way to stop the cycle and start to reverse it. Now, this doesn't happen overnight, and the reason we still talk about these things and work with other people and go to meetings and continue to work through these steps is because we're not cured. And on a bad day, I can look nearly as bad as I did 7-8 years ago without any drugs or alcohol, which is evidence to support the fact that drugs and alcohol weren't my problem. They were clearly igniting a gas tank, so to speak, and making things much worse. But at the end of the day, the things that I struggle with have nothing to do with drugs and alcohol. Drugs and alcohol were my solution. And so taking those out of the picture, it at least gives me a chance to work on these things. And if I'm successful and diligent, then I never have to get high again. And this dog's actually humping me right now. We didn't script it. We didn't script this. He's got a character defect. He doesn't ask before he copulates with people. And he's been doing this to me for years. So I'm used to it. He's shooting blanks. So that's rewarding.
Oh, that's great. Can't write that.
Give me a kiss. Can you at least give me a kiss? Thank you. Yeah, so, you know, we acted like that. And if we can get him on a 12-step program, then maybe he'll quit humping people without at least taking them on a date and getting to know a little bit about them first. So, regarding the sixth step, this is something that is practiced in theory on a daily basis, and it absolutely doesn't happen on a daily basis for me, but the whole process is something that we're reminded of when we go to meetings and when we talk to a sponsor or when we work with another alcoholic or addict. And so, for example, today this is helping me remember, oh, by the way, some of the struggles you have in your life right now are because you have these struggles that you need to refocus on. And we do things like pray and meditate, and not all of us are religious. But there's this strange phenomenon with the human brain that when you pray and meditate, regardless of what you believe, it brings you some relief. And there's all types of theories on that. And I don't come from a religious background philosophically, although I was raised in a religious household. So it was difficult for me to adopt these things. And I just quit questioning them because they work. It's kind of like, you know, if I didn't understand why exercise worked, but I did it and I saw the results, I'd probably quit worrying about how it worked and just focus on doing the work if I wanted the results. And it's as simple as that. Not easy. Working on yourself and looking at your problems isn't typically easy, but it is simple. So we're fortunate for that. It's not that complicated.
Yeah. And when I first started, you know, with the sixth step, you know, we write down all the character defects. And like you said, it's a daily struggle, you know, and then you mentioned the whole whack-a-mole thing because, you know, early on when I was fresh, the serious glaring defects were the first ones I had to handle. Like, I don't know about you, but I was a klepto.
Oh, yeah. I used to take people's things.
Yeah, without asking.
Well, yeah, especially if I didn't know them, that was really helpful for me. I didn't really like taking things from people I knew. So I had a little bit of a conscience, but if it was a corporation...
Definitely, businesses were in big trouble.
Yeah, if things were up for grabs, it was almost like a game adrenaline rush for me to see how much I could get away with, and I would steal stuff I didn't even need.
Always.
I got caught stealing a camera from the airport. I didn't need a camera.
I used to steal flashlights a lot.
Yeah, we come up with these weird habits, and I can't remember the last time I stole something. Every once in a while, I'll pick something up, and I'll be like, that's not yours. Put that down. And it's just really weird.
Yeah, so it was, and that kind of leads me into one of the main character defects that I had was dishonesty. And when that was pointed out to me, my immediate thought was, well, okay, I won't be dishonest. I won't lie to you, and I won't steal from you. But, you know, with the help of some other people around me, I learned that there's a lot of different layers to honesty.
Like lying through omission, which is basically, well, I'm not lying to you directly, but I'm just not going to tell you something.
Yeah, kind of dodging the question. And, you know, so that was a big one for me. You know, I battled with this one of sarcasm, and I used to think sarcasm, I used to get it mixed up with wit. And I thought, you know, I was pretty quick witted, and I...
Oh, you thought you were funny?
Yeah,
I thought so. But you were being an asshole?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I didn't realize that through the sarcasm, I was actually hurting other people, creating humor out of that.
I could see that.
And so that was another one I've had to work on. And like you said, you know, it's you can get some of them handled and at bay, and then some new ones will pop up, and you get those. And it's, you know, good thing about this thing is we don't have to be perfect. We just have to...
Thank God.
Yeah. We just have to continue striving, you know, in the right direction. And as long as I'm a better person than I was yesterday, or at least I'm trying to be a better person, because we all have our off days, you know. Just because, you know, you get rid of drugs and alcohol doesn't mean we're saints. And that was important for me to realize. And not to try to, you know, fix everything at once. You know, for me, at first, it was just, what are the three glaring defects in my life right now that I can work on?
So the worst things first, right?
Yeah. And just put those down on paper. That helped me. And then next to them, write down the opposite of those. And that's what I'm striving for that day. And I found that to be really helpful.
Yeah, when I came in here, they said, what's the worst thing you're dealing with? And it was drugs and alcohol. So we worked on that. And I was able to put the drugs and the alcohol down. And next I had to look at, well, what's the worst thing I'm doing that has nothing to do with drugs and alcohol? And that was my treatment of women. I just was very selfish and did not consider their feelings unless they affected me. And I went through a lot of therapy to work on anger management and appropriate relationship skills. And a therapist had a profound effect on me when he said, you know, you really cared about your grandmother who passed away. So how would you have wanted somebody to treat her? Mm. And something clicked in my head and gave me the motivation and the inspiration to try to find the appropriate way to treat women. And, you know, not to pat myself on the back, but I've come a long way. And the interesting thing was that when I made that change and was able to see it for what it was worth, the idea of being selfish with women lost its appeal. And it's, you know, it's repulsive. It repulses me now to think about acting the way I used to act. And so for that, I'm truly grateful.
You know, I think it's important to point out what the steps are all about. And my understanding of it today is to achieve a spiritual experience and an entire psychic change. And what that looks like for me is it's changing my perspective. It changes my perspective of you. It changes my perspective of God. And it changes my perspective of me. And again, you know, before getting sober, I didn't think I needed to do all that. But what I found is, like, the person that's sitting next to you today is not the same person that went to high school with you. You know, yeah, it's the same body, but the way I think and perceive things is completely different. And it was necessary for me, if I wanted to live drug-free, to have that change take effect. And, you know, I kind of look at this, many of the steps as a way of, you know, correcting the scales of karma. And part of that is, you know, I got to stop doing bad shit if I want, you know, those scales to get righted. And that's what the 6 and 7 step really look at is, you know, how can I stop with that behavior so I'm not adding to the wrong scale? And, you know, if you stay tuned, you're going to talk about 8 and 9, which also helps writing those scales. There's a little plug for next time.
Can you guys just kind of just tell us what's the distinct difference between, you know, writing down, admitting the exact natures of our wrong, and how that's different from entirely ready to have God remove all the defects of character? So the difference between the natures of our wrongs and the defects of character, how do we get these? How do we come to these?
Well, I'll segue, and I'm sure Jared will knock it out of the park. So, you know, what Jared was saying when people start talking to me about spiritual experience and psychic change, I'm like, you're on drugs. Like, whatever you're talking about is not as screwed up as what I'm dealing with here. However, sitting next to a man who used to drink his own vomit on the train, which was probably a necessity because he got a DUI and didn't have a car or license anymore, having transformed into a man who basically helps run his family's company, and has created a life that most people dream of and seems to treat people well and give back, that's evidence of a spiritual experience that led to some type of change. Call it psychic, call it a mental transformation. And seeing that was something that got me through looking at these weird terms that seemed really weird. And to segue into what Christian, the founder of the Most High Show, was asking us, you know, what's the difference in writing them down and admitting them to someone else, which is step six, and then moving on to step seven, which is being entirely willing to have these removed. And I think really that goes from an action step where we admit them and we look at them to a step of faith where we believe that something, somehow, somewhere, call it the universe, call it God, has the ability to remove these things from us at some level. And faith has been a big part of this process. It's said that faith is hope with a track record. And so in the process of getting through 1 through 5, that hope started to turn into some faith. And that faith helped me continue on to even the next steps, where it was time to start paying people back for money I owed them, start going to people who I wronged and trying to make things right. That takes some gumption or courage that I didn't come into this world with constitutionally. I had the courage to carry a gun and be a drug dealer and interact with people who could and would murder me under certain circumstances, but the courage to actually look you in the eyes and say, I was wrong, and what can I do to make that right? That's not something I was born with. And so that was something that was cultivated. And it was described to me that I'd been carrying around a metaphorical bag of rocks, and these rocks had gotten really heavy, and I was suffering and dying trying to carry them around. And so this process gave me an opportunity to start unloading some of this weight one at a time, pulling these rocks out, these burdens, and processing them and addressing them and dealing with them in a way where I could leave them and walk lighter and basically freer as a human being. And it's hard to describe that. I'm willing to do some hokey seeming things to maintain that forward momentum, and I'll keep doing it. Did that answer your question?
No.
That's why we got Jared here.
Because 5, we're admitting to another person the exact nature of a wrong. Basically all the foul stuff that we did, right?
Right.
And airing that out. But there's I'm trying to get you guys to explain the process. But once you've aired that out with somebody that you trust,
right?
Then this other list comes out of that, right? So talk about that process.
So
go ahead.
Yeah. So
I misunderstood a little bit.
Yeah. So I thought he was talking about 6 and 7.
Yeah.
I've got a little brain damage. I don't know if I prefaced that.
No worries. So I mean, 5 ultimately cleans out everything that has led up to this point, and then 6 is actually diving into that 4-step and actually looking at, why did I do that? What part of my personality or part of my character caused me to cause that harm, or to, you know, carry out whatever thing I had to reveal on my 5th step, whether it be insecurity or fear. Fear was a big one. But yeah, I mean, basically the 6th step just, and that's what it's all about, is identifying what drove us and, you know, why we did the things we did. And not only things that we did, but things that were done to us, you know, and, you know, identifying the reason behind that ultimately is the goal, because then you know what to look out for in the future. Otherwise, you know, you're just going to continue building up another bag of an inventory. And the goal is to empty the bag of rocks, as you want to call it, and to keep it empty as much as possible. And so as soon as I can become aware, because honestly, I wasn't aware to a lot of my defects, you know, it just had become second nature to me. And that's why it's important to have someone help walk you through it that's been through it before, because it's pretty easy to spot them when you've had them yourself. And once I'm able to identify and become aware of those character defects, it's a lot easier for me to realize when I'm acting out in them.
Well said. So in conclusion, basically 1 through 7 kind of looks like this to me. So I came in, I admitted I had a problem. I admitted I couldn't fix it. I had hoped that something in this universe could help me turn this around. And so I put some faith in that, prayed on that, and then took some actions where I wrote down, who do I resent? Why do I resent them? What's my part in that? What kind of relationships have I had, and how have those been negatively intertwined in this drug addiction? And then I basically, after looking at all those relationships and my feelings toward them, I really distilled it down to these major problems with me: selfishness, self-centeredness, hate, ego, kleptomania, just different destructive attributes I had. And then I became willing to again pray to something I didn't understand to please help me remove these. And I don't have to understand how it happened, but they got better and I'm allowed another day to keep working on them. So for me, that was basically the first 7 steps of the 12-step process. And next week we'll talk about actually putting a list down of people that we know we harmed, and who do we go to first and admit our wrongs and try to right them, and maybe who have we hurt so much that we don't actually ever interact with them. We leave them alone because that's the right thing to do. And we work through these things with a sponsor. And then we set out on this course of action where we actually go through and we go to our parents who we inevitably hurt, or we go to our friends or coworkers or people we worked for, and we take directions and try to right our wrongs, and we start paying back debts that we've typically accrued. And, you know, I'm almost 7 years into this and I have not paid off my student loans, paid back some of them, but I've made an effort to start paying off most of the stuff that I owed, and most of the debts have been cleared, but there's still some stuff out there that I've got to write, and some of them can't be paid. Some of this stuff is just, I got to give back to the universe through charity and helping other people. And hopefully one day, you know, the cumulative effect of my benevolent efforts will overwhelm the negative impact I had prior to my 30s. And hopefully I'll stay sober in the process and help some other people get sober. That's really the deal. Mm-hmm. Anything else in closing?
No, I think that summed it up pretty well. I mean, you know, the whole goal of this thing is to get better and then help others get better. And that's how it continues moving forward.
Cool. Well, it's been an honor and a pleasure. This is Mitchell with the Most High Show. I want to thank Jared for hosting us tonight, and thank Christian for being our studio guy. Bye-bye.
Bye.